Hello, Low Country. This is longtime ESPN commentator Dr. Jerry Punch, inviting you to listen to the Scott Hamilton Show every day right here on 98.9 ESPN Charleston. Because as everyone knows, Scott is a legend in his own mind.
Welcome back. Again, Gamecocks off this week. Got Florida next week. And Zeb Nolan, Zeb's supposed to be okay. He had that meniscus procedure earlier this week, but I still think Jason Brown is going to be the quarterback going forward. I think we might have seen the last of Zeb, at least as the starter. And then, of course, Clemson has Florida State on Saturday. Tigers, 9.5-point favorites. 3:30 kickoff ESPN in Death Valley. This James Franklin thing. I got an interesting message just now of a guy throwing out a name if James Franklin leaves. Matt Rhule. I mean, that makes total sense. It makes total sense, but I don't think he's ready to split the NFL just yet. Yeah. I liked him in college. Again, I told you I had a little interaction with him when he was coaching at Temple. I was covering a bowl game when he was the coach, and then he ended up leaving. Right after they took the bowl invite, he left, and they had an interim coach for the game. And that guy, I was really hoping that guy. I told you he was like Chris Farley. I can't remember his name. But I want to find out more about this, and I also want to explore what we discussed last segment, earlier this hour, with regards to Spencer Rattler possibly hanging his helmet in the SEC next year. We'll ask our guest on the Saitama Hotline. He's columnist for Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition. He's also the host of the SDS podcast, Connor O'Gara. Welcome back.
Good to be back. You know, I feel like last time I was on, you know, the college football landscape was in such a different place. Except for the fact that Georgia is dominating and nothing within the walls of Georgia has really changed, and it still looks like it's the dog's title to win and everybody else is staring up at them.
Well, and also that Clemson has yet to find the end zone consistently. Those are like the two main consistents of this season, wouldn't you say, Connor? Isn't it weird? I mean, it is weird. That's a good point. Let's explore that a little bit. How bizarre has this season been in your estimation through the first, 9 weeks so far?
It's so tough to figure out because I came off of that opening weekend saying, wow, this Clemson team that I predicted to win a national championship does not look like it has things figured out on the offensive side of the ball, and that offensive line looks bad. And sure enough, it wasn't just Georgia and that all-world defense. Clemson is just a bad football team. There's no way around it. They just have too many weaknesses up front. And you saw kind of that theme in the Super Bowl where it doesn't matter if you got Pat Mahomes back there. If you can't protect him, and if that guy's running for his life, there's not a whole lot you can do, and that's just been a bad formula with DJ Uiagalelei, a guy who doesn't necessarily have those reps. So it has hurt Clemson. Clemson's floor looks a lot lower than certainly the one I thought was possible, and I was dead wrong on that. But what I think is interesting now, and something that we're going to be talking about a lot more come Tuesday with the playoff selection show, is Cincinnati. Is what is going to happen with Cincinnati? Can Cincinnati get the bump over even a one-loss Ohio State team? Because in my opinion, they absolutely deserve to be ranked ahead of them on Tuesday. They are in position to be the first group of five teams who go to the college football playoff. And if we're going to discount what they've done so far, we should just abolish any possibility of a group of five team getting in.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's very desirous of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee to go ahead and put a group of five team in the playoff, get through that ceiling that's kept it down through the first seven editions of the playoff. What do you tell, though, Connor, the people who say the strength of schedule, opponents, so on and so forth? What is your counterargument for those folks who say Ohio State, even with a loss, has done more to demonstrate itself via its strength of schedule?
Ohio State doesn't have a quality win, not one. I mean, everybody is crowning Ohio State. Like, Ohio State is all of a sudden just back in 2019 mode when, who is Ohio State beat? Ohio State doesn't have a win as good as Cincinnati. Cincinnati went to South Bend and beat the pants off of the Irish. That wasn't even close. They controlled that entire game, and outside of a little bit of a comeback, kind of late third quarter, early fourth quarter, that was Cincinnati's football game. And if we're asking Group of Five team to actually show us what you can do against Power Five competition, I've seen more of that from Cincinnati than I have Ohio State. Now, Ohio State's going to get to face the Big Ten East, and we're going to see how this is all going to break down when they face the likes of Penn State, Michigan State. But Ohio State hasn't faced anybody yet. Anybody. And I just don't understand this love affair with them when defensively they were a train wreck against Oregon. They lost to an Oregon team that was without its two best defensive players, and they lost that game at home. I am baffled that so many people are just assuming that Ohio State is totally fine and that they're just on a one, they're going to be totally figured out for the rest of the way, and that they should be ranked ahead of Cincinnati. If you're ranking them ahead of Cincinnati, I recommend that you actually watch football games. That'd be my advice.
I'm going to counter that, though. I'm actually on the other side of that argument, and I am not an Ohio State apologist whatsoever, but to your point, they did look uninspired against Tulsa. They look uninspired against Minnesota. They look downright bad, I thought, against Oregon. But what I've seen the last few weeks has been encouraging, and considering the amount of talent that is supposedly on the roster, I think they're getting it together, but I'm going to push pause before I put them in the playoff because, as you said, they still have the Big Ten East. They still have those opportunities to really prove all the hype is legitimate and so on and so forth. We're joined by Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, Saturday Tradition. You can follow him on Twitter at CJ O'Gara. Connor, I've been talking about this Penn State situation, and it's not so much a Penn State situation as it is a James Franklin situation. And I'm sure you heard earlier this week he kept referencing Ohio State as Illinois. He referred to the horseshoe as the big house, and then, of course, that followed the news that he had switched agents. He's now in bed with super agent Jimmy Sexton. What's your take on everything going on at Happy Valley? And did you see the press conference yesterday, first of all?
Weird, yeah, all of it's weird. And this just goes back to my pretty basic take on James Franklin, that he is an insensitive, or he is just an overly sensitive guy. That's what this comes down to. He always wants to feel that love. He is always worried about what others are saying about him, what his bosses are saying about him, what the outside world views of him as a football coach. So if you understand that, it makes sense why he has acted the way that he has, where he'll never rule out the idea of another job, and he'll try and do everything he can except coming out and saying, yeah, I'm not taking the USC job. Yeah, I'm not taking the LSU job. I'm not going anywhere. I'm in my home state school. I'm happy. I have this thing figured out. Mike Tomlin had the best way to push off a potential rumor about taking a college job. James Franklin isn't willing to do that. Instead, he's buddying up with Jimmy Sexton, who, as we know, is as ruthless as it gets in this business. And when it comes to negotiating contracts, I always thought James Franklin was in a prime position in years past to be able to somehow work the system and get exactly what he's wanted. And what more could he want? That's what I don't get. What makes us think that James Franklin would have success at USC or LSU when This is a guy who has repeatedly been oversensitive about negative recruiting against him or about faking injuries or just about basic play calls. I mean, I remember one time after the Citrus Bowl, I asked him, they lose that game to Kentucky where it looks like Trace McSorley's coming back in that one. And instead he takes the ball out of Trace McSorley's hand at the very end. I asked him, like, what was the thought process behind that? He's like, oh, well, our receivers have been dropping balls. I'm like, are you kidding me? And then he fires his receivers coach the next day. I'm not a James Franklin believer. I think that he is overrated as a college football coach. And this just all goes back to my belief that he is extremely sensitive and he always needs to feel the love.
That would make going to a place like Southern Cal, a place like LSU, anywhere in the SEC other than Vanderbilt, just completely ridiculous, completely asinine, because he's going to be under a microscope 24/7. He's probably got then the best Power 5 job you can have, because it's still considered a pretty elite position. But they're tucked away in Happy Valley, man. He's kind of secluded from the rest of the madness. He doesn't have the people in Birmingham and Tuscaloosa and Austin and so on and so forth, with pitches or pitchforks and torches at his door. He can kind of hide. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, to a certain extent. Penn State fans are frustrated.
Sure.
They absolutely are. And the James Franklin in-game decisions, they're bad. That's the other part I left out about this. I mean, he finds ways to lose close games that he just absolutely should not. And that's what's been so frustrating with him. is that, you know, you kind of wonder, what does the ceiling actually look like? I mean, they had all that talent on that 2016 team and even 2017 as well with Saquon Barkley as a junior. And you look back on some of those teams, you're like, man, how did that team not get to the college football playoff with all of that NFL-ready talent? And they just weren't able to make it happen. But, you know, I think that if he were to come to LSU, it would be a terrible fit. I absolutely think that. He would not. He's not built to handle the SEC West. You know, the Big Ten East is great in its own right, but from a recruiting standpoint, I don't think he would be able to fare very well down here. I don't think his postgame press conferences would be received well by a program that just fired the national championship-winning coach a year and a half removed from it. So I think that James Franklin would make more sense at USC, if anything. But even that, man, this guy is just not necessarily built for the limelight, in my opinion, and I don't think he handles criticism very well.
Joined by Connor Aguera, Saturday Down South, Saturday Tradition. Connor, you had an excellent piece online on Saturday Down South, speculating possible landing spots for Spencer Rattler if now he hasn't decided anything or announced anything, if he leaves Oklahoma. And you illustrate, or rather you point out, three good places he could end up in the Southeastern Conference. Kind of work us through your thinking through that.
Yeah, Tennessee and Ole Miss are the two obvious ones. I think from a style standpoint, the offense that we think Spencer Rattler is capable of executing, I think both of those up-tempo style offenses, they spread teams out, they give quarterbacks the freedom to be able to run the ball. That's not necessarily what Spencer Rattler likes to do. But I think those offensive minds would be able to figure some things out with Spencer Rattler and at least put him in some good spots. That's not to take away anything from Lincoln Riley, but maybe just that breath of fresh air with those offensive minds would be ideal scenarios for him. And you look at their quarterback situations. Matt Corral, we expect to go to the NFL at season's end. Hendon Hooker could very well also be on his way to the NFL. I saw Mel Kiper had him among his top eight draft-eligible quarterbacks. So we'll kind of wait and see there. He's got a year of eligibility after this one because of 2020. Those two are obvious. And then we're never going to be able to discount Kirby Smart and his potential to take a five-star quarterback, right? Like he collects them. That's what he does. So I had a lot of people saying, oh, you know, what about Gunnar Stockton? What about Brock Vandegrift? These young and up-and-comers. It's Kirby Smart. He's going to take talent at the position if he sees it as a fit. And going to Todd Monken's offense where, by the way, Stetson Bennett is averaging over 12 yards per attempt. You know, there are worse places that you can go and spend another year before going to the NFL. But a lot of people saying that Spencer Rattler is a West Coast guy. He's going to end up somewhere, you know, Pac-12 or maybe Big 12, a little bit closer to home in Arizona or something like that. But I definitely could see him ending up at one of those SEC schools.
And Connor, before we let you go, the cocktail party this weekend, Florida, Georgia, who you picking?
Oh, I'm picking Georgia. I got Georgia winning 35-14, and I don't know what Dan Mullen is going to do with the quarterback situation if Anthony Richardson is going to be the guy from start to finish. He says he's going to play both of them, but whoever starts quarterback for Florida is going to make mistakes against the Georgia defense, and once that happens, it's all she wrote, and it's downhill from there. It's just as good of a defense as I've seen since I've been covering college football for the last 10 years or so, and then with Saturday Down South since 2015. I mean, this group is just so special. They don't miss tackles, and I don't expect them to miss any of them in Jacksonville. And if Anthony Richardson makes some of the reads that he made against LSU, then it's going to be bad news bears for the Gators, and this is going to get lopsided in a hurry. But, yeah, give me Georgia to run away with this one in the second half and continue on this war path that they're on for a national title.
That is the easiest question you'll ever be asked, okay? So update my file that I gave you a good softball to walk away on.
I appreciate that. I've been asked it plenty of times this week, but, you know, you got to make sure that there's no sort of inkling that Florida can pull off the upset. But, yeah, I'm just not there at this point.
He's columnist for Saturday Down South, Saturday Tradition. He's also the host of the SDS podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at CJ Aguera. Connor, a blast as always, buddy. Really appreciate your time this morning.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, man.
All righty. It's Connor Aguera.